So far what we're talking about, if you recall, I mentioned that all Hashkofa, or all our understanding of the Bria from the standpoint of Yiddishkeit, really revolves around one central idea. And that central idea really is an understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam, of God Himself. Now, what I've been doing last week and what I'll be doing this week is to explain the idea. But you won't see how the understanding of the idea actually expresses itself in all the different various aspects of Hashkofa. That will probably start from next week and on. In other words, you'll begin to see how the understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is the pivotal point upon which the entire Bria revolves around. And then you'll first understand why it's so important to take our time to go through these ideas, even though some of them are very abstract and they tend to look very philosophical. But the truth is that one must know them if he really wants to understand a lot of the ideas of Hashkofa. Now, last week we just ended just with some of the ideas to begin this week. And that is, we were examining what is, or rather, what are some of the things that the Ribbono Shel Olam created. We know the Ribbono Shel Olam created the universe, but what's not really understood or really known by most people is what the Ribbono Shel Olam created. And last week I had mentioned that the idea, the general categories of what he created basically are three. One is that all objects were created, all things that we know of, that we can touch, concrete objects, trees, plants and so on, you know, all the different things in the universe. The second thing that was created is ideas themselves. In other words, it's not only the objects themselves that were created, but also ideas. Ideas themselves were given existence. What kind of ideas? Ideas such as good, evil, justice, war, and so on. All these ideas are abstract ideas. In other words, they're things which don't exist in themselves. They're ideas about certain relationships or whatever. That these ideas themselves were nivra, were created. For instance, as I said, the idea of justice. The idea of justice itself is a created idea. Before the Ribbono Shel Olam created the Bria, there was no such thing or no such idea called justice or din. There's no such idea called evil. Evil is a nivra. There's no such thing as bad before Ribbono Shel Olam created the concept called evil or bad. So actually at one time there was really no such thing as bad. But then there was really no such thing as good either. Even the concept of toiv or good is a created concept. And the third idea, which I had mentioned, is that not only were objects created and ideas were created, but what was also created is the concept of reality that we exist in. The framework of reality itself, and I gave examples. In other words, the framework includes the laws of existence, the laws of being. What do I mean by these? I gave examples last week. For instance, that nothing can be and not be at the very same instant in time, right? We all know that. This Shtender, for instance, cannot exist and then also not exist at the exact same instant in time. Either it's here or it's not here. That is a certain fundamental principle of reality. Another principle which I mentioned, for instance, this tape recorder cannot be a tape recorder and a desk at the very same instant. It's a contradiction, correct? In other words, it's either a tape recorder, okay, and if it is a tape recorder, it cannot be itself and something else at the very same instant time. Therefore, or rather, this forms a very crucial understanding of reality. That's a very fundamental law of reality. Those are two examples. Now, of course, our understanding of reality is such as to conform to what reality is. When the Ribbono Shel Olam created logic, or the way we think, he put into our minds the very same axioms, the very same ideas with which he created the universe. In other words, since there can't be contradictions in the universe, because that's the way he made the universe, that a thing cannot be it and something else at the same time. Therefore, we think logically, or rather, we think of the idea that, of course, it's contradictory. So therefore, if I tell you right now it's night, and you say it's not night, it's day. So I say, well, why can't it be both? Then obviously, I don't know what I'm talking about. Because we both know that it cannot be day and night at the very same instant time. You can have day and then follow night or whatever, but it can't exist simultaneously. Why? Because the Brie was created that way. That laws of existence are that a thing can only be what it is and it cannot be something else. That is a Nivra. And our minds conform to that Nivra. We think logically, which really means that God created our minds to conform to the same pattern the way He created the universe, the laws of existence. The notion of what the Rabbanim created is very important to understand. And many people don't understand, they think that the Rabbanim created things, when in reality He created things which are much deeper than that. The very bedrock that reality lies in, the laws of existence, was also created. Now that was last week, which brings us again now into this week. And that is that, if that's the case, if the Rosh made objects and made ideas and He made the actual framework of reality, well, who says He was restricted to only making this system? He could have made many systems. And the answer would be, you're right. The Rosh could have created an infinite variety of different systems. In other words, He could have created a completely different universe having completely different objects than we know of, different ideas than we know of, and even a different framework of reality than we know of. And not only could have made another one, He could have made an infinite variety of different systems. In other words, the system that we live in, I mean the universe, right? The things we see, the ideas, the framework of reality, we call that one system. That's an entire system. Okay, it's an entire universal system. But the Rosh could have made an infinite variety of different universal systems. Okay, each one being completely different than the other. Now, why the Rosh made this system and nothing else, nobody knows. That's not known. Only Rosh knows why He made this system as opposed to some other kind of existential system. But the idea I want to bring out is that this is only one kind of a system. The Rebbe Hashem could have created an infinite variety of systems, which shows us how awesome His might is. Imagine, we cannot comprehend even this system. We could spend billions of years trying to figure out what in the world is going on in physics and astronomy and biology and so on, let alone the fact that He could have created an infinite variety of systems. So all infinity wouldn't be enough time to go and figure out what the Rebbe Hashem could have created. So, you know, when you talk about the Chochmah of the Rebbe Shalom, or the ability of the Rebbe Shalom, it's incredible. When we talk about systems, we really talk about our system, but in truth the Rebbe Shalom could have created an infinite variety of systems. Which leads us to the next idea, that if that's the case, how do we perceive the Rebbe Shalom? We only perceive Him from our system. That's the only way we know the Rebbe Shalom, in terms of our system. Now, what does that mean? How do we understand that, really? Let me give you an example. Take the United Nations, okay? Now, let's assume that there's a man, Robert Smith, okay? He goes into the UN, United Nations. Now, the United Nations has many, many different nations, okay? And in the United Nations, each country has its own offices. And all of a sudden, let's say it's a holiday, New Year's, whatever, and everybody's throwing a different party. Each nation is throwing a different party, okay? And this guy, Robert Smith, would like to attend all of them, okay? But he doesn't want to come in as Robert Smith because he'll never get in. So you know what he does? He walks over to the Asia section and he sees China's having a great party, right? So he puts on a Chinese costume and he masquerades himself like a Chinese, slants his eyes, you know, whatever. Whatever's necessary to look like a Chinese guy, okay? And he's also familiar with the culture of China. So he actually acts like a Chinese guy, he speaks like them, his mannerisms like them, and he walks into the room and he beautifully blends in. They never know he's an American guy, right? It's just like a Chinese guy, okay? He spends a half hour there, and they all ask him what's his name, Robert Smith. Well, it sounds a funny name for a Chinese guy, but okay. maybe his parents were American. He goes out of the room, goes into another room, and he sees Nigeria. They're having a great bash in Nigerian hall, okay? He goes into Nigeria, then he, of course, he changes his costume with a toga, whatever they wear there, you know, paints himself black, puts on a mask where he's got the African features and so on. He acts like a Negro and black and so on and so forth. He goes in, he has a great time. They ask him his name, Robert Smith, okay? And, of course, they never know because he acts exactly like one of them. He goes out of there, okay? And then he goes into another room, Russians. Russians are Slavs. And again, he dresses like a Russian. You know, maybe he's got one of his fur hats and so on and so forth. And he drinks a lot of vodka and so on. And so on. And he goes to all the different nations, okay? And then when he gets out of there, okay, he goes home. He went to, let's say, 70 different countries, all the representatives. He goes home. And then after party, the next day, you know, we had this great guest, you know, some guy, Robert Smith. So then the other, you know, Nigeria says to China, we had a great guy, Robert Smith from China. Said, what do you mean, Robert Smith? He was in our party. She said, what do you mean, he's your party? He was black like us. What do you mean, he's black? He's Chinese like us. And all of a sudden, all the nations get together, and they realize that Robert Smith pulled a fast one. That there was one guy, Robert Smith, who attended every party, yet looked exactly like them. So everybody wonders, who is the real Robert Smith? Or will the real Robert Smith please stand up? Put it in the American expression. What does that show us? It shows us that this person appeared to each individual nation in their own guise, their culture, their language, their costume, okay? And when he went to another nation, he appeared as them. And nobody really knows who he was. Now, that's the example. But even that example is not total. Why? Because this person, Robert Smith, was still a man, right? He still breathed like them. He was basically the same, except there were certain variations that he had that was different than all of them. Okay. So therefore we see that this individual was not known to any of the nations that he attended the party at, wasn't known to any of them. And, of course, he appeared to them in each one in their own different system or guise. Take the Malachim. Angels. The Rebbe Hashem created two different universes. The spiritual universe and the physical universe. Now, both of them comprise really one system. In other words, there are things we share in common with Malachim. Okay? But by and large, they are so different than us that they're almost different system. In other words, from a larger standpoint, we and them are part of the Bria, the creation. So from a certain standpoint, we share certain things with them. However, they are so different from us in kind that it's not like the difference between a black and a white, a Chinese and an Indian or whatever. The difference is incredibly vast, almost to the extent where they're mamish a different system. But of course they're not. They are still part of the universal creation, okay, but they're variations, even though they're incredibly different variations, far more than this Robert Smith with the people in the UN. No. So therefore, again, the Rebbe Hashem we see created a different system, or rather a tremendous variation in the first system, Malachim, or the whole spiritual universe, but still, by and large, they're all part of our system. Now, a Malach, when a Malach comes into our system, and today is very appropriate, today is Vayera, right? All of a sudden, Avram is visited by three Malachim. When a Malach comes in to our system, you know, here you have a being coming from one system to the other system, he must adopt the guise of that system. He's not comprehensible in his system because we don't know that system. Okay? So what did the Malachim do? They adopted the guise of human beings. Somehow they changed, they look like humans, they acted like humans, and they acted like Arabs, where Avram thought they were. Okay? And when they ate, of course, it looked like they were eating. But in truth, underneath that guise, they were Malachim. They were beyond our particular system, or they were certainly different, a variation than us. So therefore, when one being goes from one system to the next, he assumes the identity or the guise of that system. Even when Moshe Rabbeinu went into Shemayim, which was a reverse intrusion, you have the Malachim coming down here, and Moshe Rabbeinu went into Shemayim to receive the Torah, he also adopted some of the guise of the other system. That's why he didn't need food and water. Because in that system, one does not eat. So his being sort of took on a great deal of the... In other words, he had the guise outwardly anyway, of the Ruchni Stiga system. So therefore he wasn't subject to many, the laws of physical reality were suspended. When he came back, it started again. Okay? So again, the same notion. Now, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is beyond all systems. In other words, it's not like the Malachim who are different, they are variations in our system, but they're still part of the Bria. The reversion is completely beyond any existential system that we know of or can possibly conceive of. He's beyond any system. I see, now you begin to see what it means to be beyond the system. Now, that's what it means when they say Atzmusoi lo noida. The Etzem means the real self of God is not known. Is not known, it's not understood. It's not comprehensible by any entity outside of himself. Because when the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to any entity outside of himself, how does he appear? In their system. Like Robert Smith appeared in each of these people. But of course Robert Smith is still a human. The Ribbono Shel Olam, when he appears to a universe, it's only in the universal system that he created himself. What does that mean? For instance, let's take the idea of strength. The Ribbono Shel Olam also Yamsuf, right? All of a sudden he splits the sea and the ocean split. That's an incredible act of strength. Gvura, tremendous might. But yet Gvura, so the Ribbono Shel Olam is displaying an attribute called strength, right? But the truth is that the idea of Gvura itself is a created idea. But when the Ribbono Shel Olam interacts with this universe, he interacts with our known concepts. And we have a concept called strength. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam performs things, it looks like he's performing them with incredible strength. But the truth is that the idea of Gvura really is not applicable to him. We don't know what he is. What do you mean God has no strength? When he interacts with our universe, he can perform infinite amount of strength. But the idea of strength is not applicable to him. He doesn't have what's called strength in terms of his real self. Then what does he have? We don't know. And what does it mean that he doesn't have strength in terms of himself? Again, we don't know. We cannot conceive of a being outside our system. A being in our, we can only conceive of a being, it's got to be something. He's got to have some kind of attribute, strength, or he's got to, you know, he has to have substance. There's got to be something there. The Ribbono Shel Olam is beyond all of that. So then the question, we don't understand what it means for a being to be beyond that, and I don't understand what it means for what he can possibly be. Atzmusoi lo noida. So if you thought you had some Atzmusoi, his etzem, his self, lo noida, is not known to any being outside himself. So you, if you thought you had an inkling of what the Ribbono Shel Olam is, you begin to realize how far he is removed from your conception, your comprehension of what a being God really is. So in other words, within our system, the Ribbono Shel Olam is certainly not. And he's not any infinite systems that he could have created. And he's beyond all systems. And when we conceive or perceive him, he sort of like enters our system, like Robert Smith enters their room guised as them. And then when he leaves, he's not a Chinese. When the Ribbono Shel Olam leaves our system, so to speak, he's not anything like we think he is. He's not known. He's completely beyond. And beyond means he's not just another looking kind of being, he's another kind of person, whatever. No, even the ideas that are applicable to us, like strength, might, jealousy, and so on, that are applicable to human beings, are not applicable even to him in terms of his real self. And even the laws of existence are not applicable to him. And that's why he can violate them, like I mentioned last week. He transcends those laws. He can make something be and not be at the same instant in time. He can pull off contradictions that we, of course, cannot conceive of because he transcends those laws. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam is beyond any system. But when he's perceived by us, he's perceived only within our system. So you get an appreciation of what it means that the Ribbono Shel Olam is completely incomprehensible. Very important to understand. That's what they say, don't magashim the Ribbono Shel Olam. Don't make him physical. That's what you do. You know, everybody's got a different conception. Like some Hasidim think he's got a Shtreimel on and a big beard and a lange rekel, a zadne kapota and so on. maybe Litvaks think he's got the chves, short coat or whatever Litvish, you know, dress, and so on. Or Sfardish Yidden think he's dark colored, he got tour. I mean, you know, and so on. The Rebbe Shlomo is none of these things. He's not human. He is a human. And not only is he a human, he's a system. Means he's beyond or outside of the system. But nevertheless, he exists. And he's as much human as any of us in the sense that he created what? Humanity. If you think that God has to be human to appreciate humanity, you're making a big mistake. He created humanity. God created the idea of compassion. So therefore, the Rebbe Shlomo can, his act can be the quintessence of compassion, infinitely greater than your compassion. He doesn't have to be human in order to understand humanity. He created humanity. So in a certain sense, he is the greatest human being of all. In that sense, that all the attributes that we see, the good attributes that we see in humanity, he is the quintessence of that. He's the perfection of that midah, even though he himself is not human. Okay? He doesn't have to be human. And it's meaningless to think even that he has a shaykhus to humanity. Okay, so that's what it means. You can't magashim the Roshim. You cannot make the Roshim physical. But it means not only making him physical, don't make him spiritual either. God is not a spiritual being. He doesn't resemble the Malachim either. He's beyond, infinitely beyond the Malachim. They also don't know who he is. He is as far removed from them as he is from us. Believe me, he's as far removed from them as from us. But he created two independent systems, the spiritual system and the physical system, and we bridge the two. We have an neshama, which is part of the spiritual system, and we have the body, which is part of the physical system. But he transcends all systems. Very important idea to understand. And that's the true conception of the Rebbe Shlomo. And what is that? That we have no idea what he is, because beyond any system. The question was asked is that if he's so beyond our system, how do we describe him at all? How do we describe him at all? I mean, how do we say he's this and he says that? Because the truth is that he's really none of these things. The truth is that he acts this way in terms of our system, the way we describe him. But he certainly is none of those things. What you've understood is a very fundamental principle in tefillah. You know, when we say tefillah, what does it say? This is in Shimon Esrei, right? Hokel Hagodol Hagibra Neira, God, right? Hagodol Hagibra Neira, Hagodol the great, Hagibra the strong, Vaneira the awesome. Kel Enyoin, Gemma Chasodin, and so on, right? So we say only three things, or rather four things, right? So the Gemara brings, there was once a Maisa where somebody was once davening. I think it was in Amora. I forgot his name. And he was davening, and he started saying, Hokel, the God, Hagol, the great, Hagibah, the strong, Hanur, the awesome. And he went on. Horachim, the merciful, and the Mechanun. And he just went on and on. You know, like, he went on to, 15, let's say, 15. He thought he was doing great, you know? So he davens from us, he finishes, and the other person, and so his Rebbe walks over to him and says, why did you stop? He said, when you stop, I mean, you know? He said, did you think you finished his praises? Of course not. Once you begin, you can't stop. Right? Because anything you say is absurd, connected to Rebbe Shlomo. It's infinite. So what he was saying to that person is that the Rebbe Shlomo gave us permission to say only those three things. But the truth is that if you really want to talk about him, it would be an infinite statement. And the real truth is that you could say nothing about him because none of these are applicable to Atz Musay, to his real self. But even if you could describe him, it would be an infinite amount of statements. So why stop? So he meant, well, once you began and you assumed that you could describe him fully, because you're saying more than three attributes, right? You're saying four, number five, number six. Then you're obviously assuming that, well, you know, you describe him fully. The answer, of course, you can't. You must go on until infinity, until you're dead. You can't stop. But we've been given permission to say three and stop. But of course, that's not a completion of what the Rebbe Shlomo is. That's what he was telling him. That if once you begin to describe him, there's no end. There's nothing you could say about him that has an end. And there's nothing more I have to say about the Rebbe Shlomo. So therefore, we can always say in Shemoneh Esrei, okay, la God, la Gibba Neira, and no more. You know what it's like? It's like a little kid walking over to his dad. Let's say his daddy is the greatest weightlifter in the world. I think the record now is about 550 pounds, you know? And a little kid goes over and says, wow, my dad, he goes over to his friend and he's bragging, you know? My daddy's, wow, how strong he is, you know? He can lift a whole table. Now, of course, between themselves, wow, you know, each of them thinks the table is a feat. But according to the father himself, it's preposterous. What do you mean a table? He can lift 500 pounds. He can lift 300 tables on his back. So it comes out that the shvach, the praise that this kid said about his father, is ridiculous. It's ridiculing his father. It would have been better if he had said nothing at all. And the essence of tefillah is it's nothing. If you want to praise the Ribbono Shel Olam accurately, right, there's only one way to say it. And that is, God, I have absolutely nothing to say about you, because whatever I say cannot possibly comprehend. Therefore, I am silent in my description of you. That is the greatest shvach that you can say to Ribbono Shel Olam. Utter silence, because there's nothing else you can really say. Now, it doesn't mean you should go home and stop davening. But in any case, that is really the true tefillah of one. I mean, that's the true recognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That there is nothing more you really can say. I can't describe you, so I might as well not stop. Because nothing I say can describe you, because it's all infinite. And as we've learned now, none of them is even applicable to him. Because he's beyond those words that we use. Because those words are only part of our system, like great and strong. He's beyond all that altogether. So right now, our understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam is much deeper than most people's understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That it's not stami as an infinite variety of attributes. There is no attribute that's even applicable to him. Which brings us to the next idea. Where do we see that? It says a pasuk in Yeshaya. It says, V'yamit damyuni, Yeshaya says to Klai Yisrael, V'yamit damyuni, and unto whom will you, and unto what, or whom will you compare me? V'eshve, and I will be similar. Who are you going to compare me to? Yima Kodesh, says the Holy One. That pasuk is Megala, reveals a tremendous principle. And that principle is what we're talking about. God says through Yeshaya to Klai Yisrael, who are you going to compare me to? What are you going to compare me to? And I should be compared to that. Because the answer is nothing. God resembles nothing in this universe. Absolutely nothing. That's when we meet Damyuni V'eshver. Who are you going to compare me to? In that pasuk lies the fundamental idea that God is not comparable in any way to us. We have our own system. He's beyond the system. Wait, I'll show you. I'll cover that. And it says, Yema Kodesh, says the Holy One. Why does it say Yema Hashem? Why Kodesh? What does Kedusha really mean? The word Kedusha, or the root of Kodesh, really comes from the word to be separate, to be removed. Now you begin to understand what that means. When we call the Rosh Hashanah HaKodesh, the Holy One, what we're really saying is God is completely removed from the entire universe or system as we know it. That's Kedusha. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam has no admixture of any entity in him besides his pure Poshut self. He is completely removed from the physical and the spiritual universe. That's why it's called HaKadosh, the Holy One. That's why the Pasuk ends there, Yom HaKadosh, says the Holy One. The Holy One says, because that name describes his complete removal from the universe. V'yamit damyuni v'eshver. What are you going to compare me to? I'm not like anything you know. I'm completely indescribable. Yuma Kodesh, says the Holy One. That's really the idea of Kodesh. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Kedushim to you, right? What does God say to Klai Yisrael? You should be holy. Kedushim to you. That statement has tremendous significance. Because it... No, not from Goyim. Kedushim to you means separate yourselves like I am separate. Separate yourselves from the entire physical universe. That's which we'll get into. We'll get into later. That word kedushim to you has tremendous fundamental significance of what the ultimate direction a Jew takes. And that's complete separation from the physical universe. Right now it sounds like a a strange idea. Don't worry. As we get on, that idea will also become very clear to you. But that condition to you, I'm telling you now, hints at or expresses a very fundamental principle of Yiddishkeit. That our goal is to reach the state of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, so to speak, Kavyochol. We can't reach his complete separation. But in a certain sense, our goal is also to become separate, Kodosh. But it means from our system or our universe, our physical universe, not the total system, but our physical system, which we'll get into as time goes on. Now, so we now understand what the idea of Kedusha is. We understand what the Elmit Damuni. And you remember the third idea was Einayim Mavadai. And now we understand what Einayim Mavadai in comparison. The reversion creates a system, which he is independent of, right? So the Elmit Damuni says that God is not comparable to the system he created. Einayim Mavadai, that there is nothing else besides God, says that even the system he created is not really existing the way he is. That's what those two different ideas mean. That even after he creates a system in which he is not comparable to, the system itself does not exist the way he does. And if you recall the illustration I gave in terms of the dream, the difference between a dreamer and his dream, that the dream does not have the same kind of existence as a dreamer. We do not have the same kind of existence as a Rabbeinu Shlomo. And that's what the difference between those two psukim. Yamit Damyun means he creates a system of which he is beyond and everybody else is included, namely the Ruchni Stiga system and the physical system. And Einayim Mavadai means this entire Bria creation, which is a system which he created, among an infinite variety of systems he created, itself does not compare in terms of its existence to the Rabbeinu Shlomo. The next question is, if that's the case, how then does the Rabbeinu Shlomo appear to us? The answer is, right? How does he appear to us? We know he's beyond our system, he's beyond the Malachim system, he could have created an infinite variety of systems, right? And even in davening, we know that he's beyond that system, right? So then the question, of course, is, how does he appear to us? The answer is, Yud Gimel Midas. The Rabbeinu Shlomo says to Moshe Rabbeinu, there are 13 attributes by which I am known, right? Rachum, Bechanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, Ve'emes, and so on. The Rabbeinu Shlomo appears to us with a certain personality. He has a certain consistent, projected personality that he always appears to us as, and he doesn't deviate from that personality. What is his personality? The Yud Gimel Midas, the 13 attributes. They tell us what the Rabbeinu Shlomo is in terms of the way he presents himself, in terms of his actions to the universe. You see? By studying the Bria, if you recall, I said studying the Bria means two things. To understand what he created, the structure, and the ongoing intervention of the Rabbeinu Shlomo in the Bria, because he keeps intervening in the Bria. He punishes some people and he rewards others and so on. We can understand the personality of the Rabbeinu Shlomo, or rather the guise that he assumes in our Bria. Remember, his real personality, so to speak, is not conceivable, but it's so what? He wants us to know this kind of personality, and this is the way that we identify the Rabbeinu Shlomo. As a Baal Chesed, as a Baal Toiv, as Rachmim, and so on, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, and so on, all the different attributes that the Rabbeinu Shlomo comes across, that he says, Yud Gimel Midas. That is the personality that he created, and he enters or interacts our universe in that personality or that guise. Okay? And that's, as far as we're concerned, that's all we have to know. Is that this is the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Of course, as long as we know that in truth it's not, we don't know what he is. But for all practical purposes, we now can put that aside and we adapt. Our understanding of him is that he is what he said he is. And believe me, he is the quintessence of that, and he's consistently that, and he will always appear that way. Okay? As these midas, chesed and tov and rachmim and all the midas tovos, because he says it, the Rosh Hashanah says that in the Chumash, that this is the way I appear. He's a rachim before the chet and a rachim after the chet and so on. In all the many, many myriad ways how he appears, okay? It's always within the guise of the Yudgimun Midas. That's his personality. So we can take a pray to the Rabbanu Shalom that he's a Rachum, he's a Chanun, right? He's Gimel Chasadim Tevim, because that's exactly what he does. That's what he is, and that's the way he acts toward us. And for all practical purposes, that's the way we recognize him, and that's how we pray to him. And that's exactly what he wants. Okay? So now we finally understand what the Rabbanu Shalom is in terms of what he wants us to understand him as. You know what the three fundamental components or elements of the universe are? You know what they are? Matter, space, and time. Matter is etzem, space is mokom, and time is man. Those are the three fundamental ideas in this bria. We all exist in space, we all exist in time, and we all are made up of choymer, matter. Okay, the Rabbanu Shalom is none of these. And just for a little appreciation of that, I just want to go into what are these three things and what he therefore is not. And you can get a real idea of how he transcends the three fundamental components. So obviously he certainly doesn't look like any of us, because he's beyond any of the three ideas. Okay, let's take a look at space.
Can the Malachim see him?
No, nobody sees him. He's not seeable, he's not knowable.
Even when we die, we won't know?
No, not Atzmusa. It's not knowable. No, but you'll be granted such a tremendous amount of knowledge about him that itself will be Olam Haba. Well, which we'll talk about when we get to Olam Haba. Now when we get there, I should say. And when we talk about the topic of Olam Haba. Does everybody know what space is? We all know what space is, right? We exist in space. But I'll bet really nobody knows what space is. You know what space is? You know, if space is, right, this stand exists in space, correct? That means you can put your finger here and you can put your finger here, right? It's obviously they're apart, correct? But wait a minute. They're apart because in between is a stender. But if you put your finger in one and here, is there anything between my two fingers besides air? Let's assume there's no air. Let's assume I'm in outer space. If I put my finger in outer space in one spot, and then I put my finger in another spot, are they in the same location? No, they're apart. But is there anything in between? Nothing. Wait a minute.
So there's nothing in between.
But how can there be, if there's nothing in between, why are my fingers separated?
By distance.
Good question.
By distance.
No, distance is after the fact that there's space, we know there's distance. But the question is, if there's nothing in between, then you tell me why my two fingers in outer space are apart. The answer is because space is merely the extension of nothing. And all things exist in nothing, and therefore they can mispash it. They can extend themselves.
Mispashus.
Wait, I'll explain again. Nochma, I'll explain again. What is space? Space means that there's an extension. See the extension? Because my hands can go apart, right? But there's nothing here, right? What does that show us? It means that nothing, no thing, which means nothing, itself has extension. Look, you see, there's nothing in between, yet nothingness has extension because I can put my finger at two different points in nothing. So it doesn't mean that matter has extension. Nothing itself has extension. That's really what space is. The Rabbanu Shalom created the Bria. He created a concept called Mokom. Means that all of a sudden, he made nothing have extension. Now, once there's extension all over, you don't, right? Then the Rabbanu Shalom, when he creates a thing that has matter, can now fit into that extension. It can now, when he creates the thing, it now extends itself into the space available for it. But if nothing did not have extension, then matter could not exist in space, because there's nothing to extend itself in. There's nothing there. It's an abstract idea, but it's not that hard to understand. Because with that illustration, nothing has extension. That's all. It means you can have a distance without anything being in between. Which means that space does not mean that matter extends, therefore you can take a measurement like 3 feet. Nothing also can extend into 3 feet of nothing. That's what mokum really is. And if I take a sefer, right, and I put it right in between that 3 feet, of course, now this is in between the extensions of nothing, right? But that's why this can exist in there, because this has room to spread itself in that space, which is extension of nothing. Understand what space really is? That's what space really is. Now, that's our first idea. That an extension of nothing is really called space or makom. And that matter, when it's created, is placed into that makom, and therefore matter itself can extend. It has dimensions. But that's only because makom precedes matter. Can everybody understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I ask you, wait a minute, not only is it true that space extends itself, but did you know that space or nothing extends itself in 3 different directions? Because I can go like that, I can go like that, and I can go like that, or rather this way. There's length, width, and height, or breadth. So it comes out that not only does space or nothing have extension, right, but I can go this way, I can go that way, and I can go this way. So it extends itself in 3 different directions. So if you really thought you understood nothing, now you really understand nothing. Okay? That space extends itself, not only does it extend itself, but it extends itself in 3 different directions. Therefore matter, a thing, when you put it into space, also extends in 3 different directions. That's why you have length, width, and height, or breadth. You see? Because space is what's called 3-dimensional. Now you understand what dimensional means. 3-dimensional space is nothing more than 3-directional space. It means that space goes 3 ways. Therefore, the matter which occupies space also goes 3 different ways. You see? So therefore, nothing has extension. It extends 3 ways, 3 directions, and that's what's called 3 dimensions. Therefore, matter, when it occupies space, also extends 3 different directions. Now, there's a notion of a 2-dimensional being, which means... Now, let's take a 2-dimensional universe. You know what a 2-dimensional universe is? It's like a universe, it's like a shadow, right? A 2-dimensional universe would be space, but only extending length and width. It has no breadth. It's a shadow, like a universe of shadows. Okay? Now, that would be a 2-dimensional universe. Okay? A 1-dimensional universe would only be length. It would be a line. There would be no width or breadth. Now, we understand what 2 dimensions and 1 dimension is, and 3. We don't really conceive of it, because how can something exist if it doesn't have 3 dimensions? Again, it's hard. But I can understand what a shadow universe is. Okay. Now, if you think that space only has to exist in 3, of course not. It can exist in 2 and even 1, although it's hard for us to understand, but we can understand it. Can space extend itself in 4 directions, 4 dimensions? The answer is yes. But we have no idea where that 4th direction is. And space can extend itself in 10 directions, but we have no asaga, you see? So in other words, the Rebbe Hashem created the Bria with mokum, space, nothing, to extend itself in 3 directions. He could have made a universe to extend itself in 2 directions, or 1, or 14, or 18. We do not know what that means, okay, but nonetheless, it's still true. In fact, mathematics has formulas for more than 3-dimensional universe. It has formulas for a 10th-dimensional universe. Of course, it's only understood in mathematical terms. Nonetheless, it's still a universe. Now, we understand what space, the idea that space is 3-dimensional, that matter occupies space, and it itself, therefore, is 3-dimensional, that you can have more than 3 dimensions, you can have 2 dimensions or 1 dimension, and that God could have created 4 or any amount of dimensions, and also the idea that mokum itself is a nivra, space itself is a created concept, now, which means automatically that God does not exist in space. He is spaceless in that sense. He doesn't need mokum to occupy himself in. He doesn't need a space, and therefore he can fit himself in that space. Because we cannot conceive of that. We can't even conceive of a fourth dimension or a one dimension. How do we conceive of a dimension, a no-dimensional being? We can't. But the Rebbeinu Shlom is a no-dimensional being, because the Rebbeinu Shlom has no makom. That's again, remember we talked about Ayin Koyma Laharitzoi? Where is the makom of the Rebbeinu Shlom to praise him? The answer is that he has no makom. He has no space. Forget about that, he is all over. In our terms, Mole Eskolo Eretz Kavoidoi, the Rebbeinu Shlom fills all space, which we spoke about previously. But the true idea is that the Rebbeinu Shlom doesn't exist in space whatsoever. Only we, this universe, has dimensions. He is spaceless. So of course, he is beyond the system. Our system has space and it has a three-dimensional space. He's beyond not only three dimensions, he's beyond the concept of makom. Okay? And when we talk about Tzimtzum, you'll understand that even better.
I can't conceive it.
Wait, okay. I'm going to stop now this year. And next week we'll continue on time, what time, and then we'll begin to go into the extensions of the principle. Now we understand the Rebbeinu Shlom to a certain extent. How does that understanding, how is that now going to help us in terms of understanding Yiddishkeit, in terms of the reward, the task of a Jew, the history of Jews, and on? We'll be going developing that in the weeks to come. This year is going to be speaking about the rest of the attributes of the Rebbeinu Shlom as we know him. And then probably starting next week, we're now going to use those principles that we've been learning for these several shurim and begin applying it how they form the pivotal principle of the Bria. Now what we've been discussing until now, which is, and you probably maybe wonder why I'm spending so much time on it, is to discuss the Achdus, the unity of God. Just to understand what it means when we say that the Rebbeinu Shlom is one. And through the previous shurim, I've been explaining what the idea of Achdus really means. Of Echad, of Yochad, of Yuchad, of Miyuchad, of what Einoid Melvada means, of what Be'el Mita Damyuni means, all the different concepts about what it means when we say that the Rebbeinu Shlom is really one. And starting next week, or maybe even this week, it depends what, you know, how much time, you're going to begin understanding why so much time is spent on that. But before I begin that, I want to be mashlim the inyan, at least in terms of the shurim. One can never complete the ideas of God. But anyway, I want to try to complete something here in terms of the other attributes of the Rebbeinu Shlom. And that will sort of like round out enough of an understanding of the Rebbeinu Shlom to proceed into the real Hashkofa, in the sense of how do we understand the application of that principle? How does knowledge of the Rebbeinu Shlom actually translate itself into the Bria? So in other words, we didn't start speaking, or rather, about the Rebbeinu Shlom because we have to give him covet, we have to give him honor, since he's the greatest being of all. So if we start a Shein Hashkofa, we got to start speaking about him. Like you defer to the president, you know, president and so on, you know. That's not why we mentioned, although I'm sure that would have been enough of a rationale. And we didn't speak about the Rebbeinu Shlom because he is the beginning, since he created everything. So he's obviously the first being or nimtzer that we encounter. That's also not why we spoke about him. The reason why we spoke about the Rebbeinu Shlom first is because the Rebbeinu Shlom is the knowledge of the Rebbeinu Shlom is a prerequisite to understand Hashkofa itself. It's not stam a mitzvah where, by the way, there's a God. In order to understand the Bria itself, you must understand ideas about the Rebbeinu Shlom. And that's why so much time was spent. But you really begin appreciating it, you know, as from actually from shortly after the Shia, how things really materialize. Now, there's certain other very fundamental concepts about the Rebbeinu Shlom which is very important to know. The first of these ideas is called Poshet. God is a very simple being. Now, that does not mean that God is simple-minded, or that he's very naive, or, you know, simple the way we, you know, when we speak about he's a simple person, means he's not complex. That's not what we mean when we say that about the Rebbeinu Shlomo. What we mean is that the Rebbeinu Shlomo has absolutely no parts whatsoever. There is no period. Now, period is a very important word. Period means there's no division. There's no parts, no separations of components. God does not consist of components. Now, if you take a look at us, we consist of components, right? We have a brain, we have a heart, we have so many different kinds of organs, and millions of different cells and so on. The Rebbeinu Shlomo has none of these halakim, or parts. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't only mean that God doesn't have different organs or whatever. Let me give you an example. Take the human mind. The human mind has several faculties. It can do several processes. For instance, memory is one process, right? It remembers. It has an imagination. If you close your eyes and you imagine something, there it is, right in front of your eye, right? So obviously it's able to draw an image, a mind image of something. So that's the imagination. Human beings also have, they can reason or think. They have a reasoning process where you can actually reason. Human beings also have a will. A will means you have a rutzen. Whether you are willed or not, we all have a will. But the thing is that the will is so simultaneous with the act, they don't realize you're willing. You only realize you're willing when you want to do something and all of a sudden you can't do it. So something hurts. The hurt is because something is opposing your will. Okay? But human beings have a will. A will is that which wants. We all want things. And when we want something, we do it. Not only that, if you take your hand and you lift your hand, right? That hand, I will that hand to lift. But I don't see, not only I don't feel the will, right? But I don't see the connection between my will and this arm. I don't know why it lifts. I have no idea. How can my willing lift an arm? I don't know. Okay? Nobody really knows. But the idea is that we all will. Okay? And not only that, but when my arm is lifted, do you know that from microsecond to microsecond, I have to keep willing it up? Because if I stop, I can stop it midair. It means I didn't will it anymore. So in other words, the human mind, part of it has a will, okay, which is the moving force behind all its actions. Even if you're not aware of it, and even if you don't know how it's connected to your body. But it's always continuous in all your actions. So the human mind has a will also. The human mind also has creativity and so on and so forth. It has many, many different faculties. Right? Now, so we see that it has different faculties. Each faculty is different than the other. Right? Memory doesn't interfere with reason, which doesn't interfere with imagination, which doesn't interfere with the will. Each one is a separate, distinct concept. Okay? Well, let me just... that's the first idea. Second idea is, wait a minute, what does all these different things? The answer is the brain, right? But there are different areas or locations in the brain that do these different things. There are a certain group of cells that's responsible for will, a certain group of cells that's responsible for memory, and so on. Each faculty has a different location than the other faculty. Obviously, because one faculty cannot give rise to two things simultaneously. It can only do one thing at a time. Okay? So therefore, the source of the faculties, that which enables them to be done, is obviously located in different places in the brain. The third idea is that the faculty, let's say memory, and the cells which enable it to happen are two different things. Cells is one thing, and the process called memory is another thing. Right? Those are three distinct ideas. The division of faculties, the division in locations, and a division between the actual property, the faculty, and the thing which allows it to be, the source, right? That's what exists in human beings. So in other words, everything has period. But that really shows it out because in the mind itself, we divide it three times, rather than just saying we have an arm and a heart or whatever. Now, in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, it's all one. What does that mean? That means there's a certain thing that reasons, wills, remembers, does everything. All the faculties are one, the organ that produces the faculty is one. There's no different locations for any of these different faculties. And the faculty and the organ are synonymous. Now, what am I really saying? I'm saying the whole thing, which I divide in three, is really one. Now, we do not understand what that means, because in this brio, things are divided. There's a notion called pirud, division, components. All things have division. There's no such thing as something which is one principle, and from that emanates everything. The property, the source, and the property and the source itself are one. In the Rebbeinu Shlom, it's one simple idea. His essence is simple. In other words, that he, or rather the faculties, the origins, are all the same. He and the origin itself are the same. He and the faculty are the same. It's all one. But we have no concept of what that means. But that's a very important idea to know. It's called poshut. He's simple. That's what God's simplicity means. There's no complexity. Complexity means there's no halakim. There's no components. It's called poshut. Once we understand that, then we begin to see that the yochid, the achdus of the Rebbeinu Shalom, is even more profound. Not only is God one in the sense that nothing else existed before He created it, and nothing else exists even after He created it, compared to His existence, right? This is in terms of what He does. But even the essence of God is one. There's no components. In other words, He is one before and after His ma'asim, and He is one in His own essence. You see? So the true meaning of echad, one, means He is one. There's no components. Even the being itself, God Himself, is one. There's no division whatsoever. So that's the deeper meaning of the word achdusai, as applied to His metzias, His essence itself. And if you recall last week, or whatever, the previous shun, I made a differentiation between essence and existence, or things. We all have existence, right? Means I am not existence. I have existence. That's why I'm here. But the idea of existence is separate from me. The Rebbeinu Shlom, since He's poshut, is existence. Because if God had existence, He again would be a murkab. He would have halakha. He and His existence would be two different things. No. God and His existence are one, which means to say that somehow God is that kind of a being that actually is the concept called existence. Again, we have no asugah what that means, because there's no such thing in this brio. All things are things and they exist. They have existence. I never saw a thing called existence walking around. What does it look like? We don't know. So the Rebbeinu Shlom and His existence are one, which means that He is existence. He is metzius. If you understand that, many of the attributes will become understood, why they are so, if you understand this last point. So, poshut of the Rebbeinu Shlom means that He is a simple being in the sense that He has no components, that everything is one principle. Even the very fact of His existence is one. That He and His existence are synonymous, which is saying that He is existence in reality. Okay. That's what pashtusa means, poshut, simple. And also that the word echod, one, that the fact that the Rosham is one, or rather poshut, is a deeper meaning of achdusoi, that even He is one. There's no plurality, there's no multiplicity, there's no division, there's no parts, there's no components, etc., etc. So that's the idea of achdusoi emanating from the fact that He is simple. So we discussed the Rebbeinu Shlom's pashtusoi, means poshut, His simplicity. We discussed His unity as illustrated even further by simplicity, right? Besides all the other ideas of achdusoi, which we discussed previously. Now we're going to just talk about God's perfection, His shleimusoi, right? The Rebbeinu Shlom is a perfect being. Now what does that mean? Well, what is a perfect individual? One would learn that perfection in God means simply like this. That God has all the qualities of existence. Everything. He's good, kind, everything. God has everything, all the qualities of existence, number one. And the second idea that one would learn, or people understand it, is that the Ribbono Shel Olam, in every quality he is infinite. Okay? So the Ribbono Shel Olam has all qualities, that's Sholem. He's perfect, means Sholem comes from the word peace or harmony, which means that everything is perfect, there's no disharmony. Okay? Nothing jarring harmony. In other words, he's complete. That's what perfect means, Sholem. Mashlem means the complete. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam has all qualities, and in every quality, he's infinite. Right? That's the way the Poshet Pshat is. But that's not really what Shlemus means. I mention it because if somebody tells you this is what Shlemus means, if you ever get a person who's going to discuss these Nyanim, then that's not really what it means at all. The Ribbono Shel Olam, if you remember, has no qualities that we know of, because all qualities are created. Remember we spoke about that? That everything we know of is created. Evil is a created concept, good is a created concept, justice is a created concept, love, war, peace, you name it, it's created. That's what Yeshaya means when he says, V'almi tedam yuni. Who are you going to compare me to? The Ribbono Shel Olam says through Yeshaya, V'almi tedam yuni, who are you going to compare me to? V'eshve, and I will be similar to that. Yima Kodesh. And if you remember, I said that Kodesh means that the name signifies the complete separateness of the version from this universe. And V'almi tedam yuni, of course, is who you going to compare me to? Nothing. There's nothing that you could point at and say, ah, that's similar to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's not comparable to anything else. So therefore, he has none of the midas that we think he has. Remember I told you that's only the guise. If he assumes the mida, it's the way he enters the bria. That's what he looks like he has. So if that's the case, then we must alter it slightly and say that whatever mida the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to adopt as his guise, right? He has that mida totally, not infinitely, totally. What does that mean? That means that the mida itself, you don't say that God is infinitely good. Because when you say the word infinitely good, you automatically are giving it to numbers. Because part of infinity is 5. Right? Or 10. And infinity means it's a quantity, but it's an endless quantity. Right? The idea with the Ribbono Shel Olam is God, that the mida, goodness, toiv, in the Ribbono Shel Olam is not quantifiable. God has all there is to that mida, and anything, if that mida has anything else, it doesn't exist, period. Whatever that mida has, or God is doing, if that's what he wants to adopt. If the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to be good, if that's his mida, then he has the complete totality of that mida. There is nothing in that mida that he does not have. And if he doesn't have it, it's because it doesn't exist, or because he didn't give it existence. You see? So Shlemus does not mean that Ribbono Shel Olam has all the midas. He doesn't have anything. But whatever mida that he decides to adopt, he has the totality of that mida. So God is the quintessence of any mida he has. And which mida does he have? Which are the midas? The Yud Gimel midas. Right? Rachum v'chanun erech apayim rav chesed v'emes and so on, the 13 Yud Gimel midas. The Ribbono Shel Olam has those midas, or he appears in those midas, in the totality of that mida, in the quintessence of that mida. Means there's nothing you can do that can even touch the mida that the Ribbono Shel Olam has. Toiv. You can never be even, you know, like a billionth compared to the kind of goodness that he has, because he's got the mida in totality. And you have an extremely minute quantity of that mida. And one does not even say that the mida that God has is infinite, because infinite bespeaks of quantity. God does not have quantities in that mida. He has the total mida. That's what the idea of Shlemus means. That whatever mida Ribbono Shel Olam has is perfect, because he embodies or he exhibits the totality of that midah. Shlemus also means another idea, that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is perfect means that there is nothing in him that's, he has no needs. He has nothing that has to have a hashlama. There's nothing in him that's lacking or wanting. For instance, in us, we have a tremendous amount of needs. We fulfill those needs, hopefully, right? Because we go out and we have jobs, we make money and we eat, but we need food to live. And we have many, many, many different kinds of needs that the human body has. The Rebbeinu Shlomo has no needs, he has no lack. That's what the real idea of Shlemus means. Perfect in the sense that there's no deficiency, there's no lack. There's nothing that God has to do, even if he's involved doing it, that has to be mamali or fulfill some lack, even if he can do it. No. There's whatsoever no lack in the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Again, we don't really understand what that means. We can understand it from a human standpoint, that like we can say, well, this person has everything. He's got money, he's got everything, you know? But of course, that's not really what Shlemus is, because he's got it. He means, what that means is that he has the ability of fulfilling all his needs. But when we say that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is perfect, God has no needs. There's no lack whatsoever in the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's the true meaning of Shlemus by the Rebbeinu Shlomo. The next attribute which one should understand about the Rebbeinu Shlomo is something which I had mentioned previously. That we do not have to be, right? We may or may not be. I mean, people are dying all the time, right? So therefore, we may exist, we may or may not exist. There's nothing in us that makes us be, that we have to keep going. The existence of God is necessary. What that means, God must exist. From within his own essence, there's something that makes him be. The Rebbeinu Shlomo doesn't have an option of suicide. He doesn't have an option of destroying himself in any way. He cannot annihilate himself in any way. The Rebbeinu Shlomo, his existence is necessitated. It's called Muchrach HaMetzius. His Metzius, his existence is Muchrach, is forced. Not that he's something that's forcing him outside of himself, but he maintains himself where he must be. So non-existence of the Rebbeinu Shlomo is not possible. If you recall, I said that there can only be one kind of God, the idea of what Yochid means. God is one, God is the absolute one. The absolute one means that a being like the Rebbeinu Shlomo can only be one kind. Okay? That really goes on this idea that I'm saying. There can only be one kind of being that must be. There cannot be two kinds. A being whose existence must be, there can only be one kind of being like that. There cannot be a duplicate. There can't be two beings that must be. And we'll see why later. But that centers on that kind of an idea. His yochid centers on the fact that he is muchrach hametzius. So that's the idea, that God must be. God, there's no option, non-existence by the Rebbeinu Shlomo is not possible. In addition, God must be perfect. It's not God happens to be perfect. That God's very essence dictates or forces his own perfection. So he's muchrach hashlemus. God must be. So the perfection of God is not an accident that happens to be that way, chance, or whatever. It flows from his essence. There's something in him that makes him perfect and makes him, he must be perfect. You know, that essence demands perfection and therefore he is perfect. He must be perfect with that kind of an essence. Okay? That's also a very fundamental idea. Now, how do we understand some of these ideas? Is there any idea about the Rebbeinu Shlomo that we can understand that will explain a lot of these attributes that, you know, are obviously not comprehensible in the sense that we certainly don't find them in this Bria at all? There's no Bria alive that exhibits anything near these kind of qualities. Also, you'll notice that all the attributes of God that I just mentioned is not attributes of Him. It's attributes that we have, and I'm merely saying that He is not. If you notice, it was all negatives. We are imperfect, correct? But He is not imperfect, therefore He is perfect. Well, it's not true. We are learning about God from us in the negative sense, if you notice. We are imperfect, but God is not like us. He is perfect. We may or may not be. He must be. We can be duplicated. He can only be one. We are complex. He is partial. We are multiple. Okay? There are many humans. Okay? The Ribbono Shel Olam, even His essence is one, and so on. All I did, if you thought I was explaining the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're making a mistake. I was merely comparing the Bria and saying that He is not. Remember in the beginning I said what the guideline is? There are two rules. One is that the only way we can know the Ribbono Shel Olam is through the Bria, right? And comparing the Bria and saying He is not that. Therefore we must deeply think about the Bria, and then we will know deeply what God is not. That's number one. And number two, that the only way we can understand the Ribbono Shel Olam at all is the way He has decided to enter the Bria, the guise that He's assumed. That's the positive we know about the Ribbono Shel Olam. But we really know the famous statement that Atzmuso lo noida, that His real essence is not known. Okay, remember that was the guideline. So, I just fulfilled my guidelines. In no way did I say anything about the Ribbono Shel Olam that was a positive statement that applies to Him. It's all negatives, and even the positives are merely the guise He adopts. Now, back to the question. So the question I asked was, is there any kind of idea that we can understand about the Ribbono Shel Olam that would explain these attributes? And maybe there is. When we say that the Ribbono Shel Olam is existence, certain things seem to get cleared up. How? Okay. If God is existence, then obviously He's perfect. Because you cannot have more than Him. He is obviously the totality of everything. If God is existence, then obviously whatever He has is all that is, because that's what He is. Right? You see? That explains that. Once the Ribbono Shel Olam becomes existence Himself, then obviously He is perfect, because there's nothing else. Because not anything else would mean it wouldn't exist. Because obviously what He is totality, because He is a full measure of that existence. So it explains Shlemus. It explains also why He must be, because existence must be. It's not like a thing which may or may not be, where the essence, the existence of it is only added to it. But if a thing is existence, then obviously it must be, because it's pure existence. Being is its essence, or existing is what it is. Also, we can understand why it can't have any duplicate. Because you can have two different things, but how can you have two different existences? There's only one existence. There are many things that exist. But there's only one idea called existence. There's no duplicate or different existences. You see? There are different things that exist. But when you talk about the fact that they have existence, there's no two things. In fact, the one thing that all things have in common is the fact that they exist. That is the greatest hashivah, comparison you can make on all creation, is that everything is. After that, everything breaks down into something different. There's no two things that are the same. So if the Ribbono Shel Olam is existence, obviously He must be, and there can be no duplicate of the idea of existence, only in things, but not in existence itself, and He must be perfect, you see? So therefore a lot of these ideas become understandable. In other words, that's what we understand. In other words, if once we understand that His essence is existence, then he's the only one that can be, and there can't be a duplicate. That's what it's meant by it flows from His essence, the fact that He must be. Because obviously there's no two kinds of the idea called existence, and so on. That idea lends a lot of understanding. That idea also lends, if you recall, Mole Kolot Kevoido, that God is in everywhere. There's no mokum that's ponoi. There's no such thing as a place that God's presence is not there. Because obviously if God is existence, then nothing would exist unless He pervades it and gives it the existence. So therefore He must be somehow in every atom, because He is the quality of existence and they have an essence. So that explains that also. It seems that that one idea perhaps explains a lot of the attributes, at least in our terms. So I offer it as at least some kind of a explanation, even though we have no idea what it means to be pure existence. You know, we don't know what that means. Okay. But if some of the mess or confusion is a little straightened, it's also not bad.
Mm-hmm.
In explaining the midas of the Rebbe Mishlam, one cannot be perfect. We have to be true to form and be imperfect. That's all there is to it, really. That is basically the ideas of all the attributes of the Rebbe Mishlam, at least in terms of what we'll be doing in the Shia. So as sort of like a sum up, what did we find out about the Rebbe Mishlam? A lot of very interesting things. We found out that He exists, that He's a first cause, He brings everything into existence, that He continues their existence. Without Him, they would cease instantly. That He Himself needs no first cause, that He is simple, that He is perfect, that He is one, He's the absolute one, He's the only one before the creation and after the creation, that He's beyond the systems, that He must be. What else did I live out? These are all the interesting ideas that we found out about the Rebbe Mishlam. And also, of course, we found out that He has actually a specific personality of which He appears to this Bria, and those are the Yud Gimel Midas. And that it's a mitzvah for us to try to understand the Rebbe Mishlam in two ways. One is by examining the Bria and seeing what He's not, because He cannot be compared. And we should examine the Bria profoundly as Tamidi Chachomim, or rather Tamidi Chachomos, this group. And we will then profoundly understand what He is not. And the second chiv for us really to understand, all this emanates from Yodat is Hashem, is the midas that He appears, or the costume, or the guise, or the personality, whatever you want to call it, that He appears to this Bria. That's also a mitzvah. And both of these things can only be understood from the maisim, or the pulus of the Rebbe Mishlam, the acts of God. And the acts of God, of course, are His creation. That more or less sums up the whole series of shurim about the Rebbe Mishlam Himself. Now, we still have time, so now we begin the application. Really begins the fascinating part. You remember way, way back I said that the Rebbe Mishlam decided to create a universe, right? And then when He created the universe, He created for one purpose only, to be mated, to do good, right? To beings, to things that He would create, to do it to incredible good, right? You know, it's a tremendous state of pleasure. Also, what was also said is that the only source of pleasure that's perfect would be He Himself, right? Since God is perfect, like we're saying, it follows that in Him is the greatest source of pleasure. So therefore, the Rebbe Mishlam decided that He would be the reward in Olam Haba, and nothing else, not some kind of external reward, like eating good food or whatever. That experiencing God directly would be the reward in Olam Haba. And remember, since God is perfect, whatever He does is with perfection. Therefore, when the Rebbe Mishlam gives good, it's called Hatova Shlema, the best possible good He can give. So therefore, since He decided that He wants to give you the best possible good, He decided, number one, that He would be the source of goodness, which I just said, right? And number two, of course, you have to work for it, if you recall. So therefore, He created a task, the whole idea of din, if you remember that whole shiur. Now, putting that aside for a minute, going back into the fact that the Rebbe Mishlam decided that He would be the source of all existence, or rather, He would be the source of pleasure. What does that mean? In other words, the Rebbe Mishlam is saying, you know, I'm not going to give Him external sources of pleasure. Food, whatever is the pleasurable experiences that this world has to offer, which are many. He doesn't want that. Since God is perfect, He wants Hatova Shlema, the best kind of good. So he's going to be the source. But wait a minute. If he's the source, it means somehow experiencing God. That's what it means. Somehow relating with him in a certain fashion. But relating means somehow knowing him. It's called hasaga. But the hasaga means not knowing him with the intellect. It's experiencing his being, not by way of intellect, but by way of your own being. You just know he is, and you just feel his existence. And the byproduct of that is incredible, not incredible, but infinite pleasure. The experiencing of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is an incredibly pleasurable act, and that's what tzaddikim feel. And that's what tzaddikim feel for those who are truly attached to God, even on this world. And that's what Nevi'im also feel. So if you think that tzaddik, which I mentioned, is giving up Mesiras Nefesh, you make no mistake. He's getting a tremendous trade-off. He's giving up the pleasures of this world for the pleasures of experiencing the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is infinitely greater. Unfortunately, I imagine nobody really has experienced it. You know, none of you people really have experienced it, so you don't really know what it means. However, it's possible to experience even in this world, which is another idea which will be explained at some future time. Now, that's the idea so far, that the Ribbono Shel Olam says he will be it, means you are going to experience something about God himself. And that experiencing is incredibly pleasurable. Now, you now can come right back to me and say, wait a minute, how can we possibly experience something about the Ribbono Shel Olam if he's not knowable? I mean, every time we're experiencing him, it's always via some kind of created entity. Right? Some created thing. We know he's good, but he created the idea of goodness, and he adapts that idea of goodness. So the question is, then what do you experience with the Ribbono Shel Olam? I mean, how do you get around this Bria business? Right? That's a good, valid question, isn't it? The answer is that of all the midas of the Ribbono Shel Olam, is one midah that we can experience almost directly, but indirectly. But it's a lot better than the other midas, because they're all created. And you know which midah that is? Who's going to guess? There's one midah of the Ribbono Shel Olam that we can have much greater of a shaychus to in terms of his etzem, even though it's not his etzem, as you'll see, but it's closer to his etzem than everything else combined. Who knows what that is? You cannot experience his perfection. You know why? Because perfection, it means that God has something which is perfect. But then you have to experience the thing itself. Perfection is merely an idea that whatever he has is perfect. But what does he have? Whatever he has is positive. You've got to experience something positive about him. Can't do that. Atzmus Elohim Noida. You cannot experience something positive about God. What he really has. And then I'll know it's perfect. Can't do that, you see? Because that would be experiencing Atzmusa. So that's out. Can't experience anything positive about the Ribbono Shel Olam. But there's one Mida you can. And what is that? Achdusoi. His unity. Let me give an example why you cannot experience God's perfection. Take a ball. A ball is round. It has shape, right? Can I experience roundness if the ball isn't here? No. Because roundness exists in the ball. It's not a separate thing by itself. The mind takes it away from the ball and says there's a concept called roundness. There's no such thing called roundness that I can touch that has nothing to do with the ball. No. Roundness is called an accidental being. It's something which is real, roundness, but it's an accident. It's not the regular accident, you know. It's a philosophical term. It means that it's something which must have something else to exist in. If you took away the ball, the substance of the ball, gone is the roundness. You see? The same thing with perfection. Something is perfect. There's no such thing as perfection in itself. Goodness is perfect, if he's perfect goodness, right? In other words, the meat of goodness, he's perfect in that, doesn't lack. But perfection itself is not a thing. It's an accident of goodness. It's a thing which is about goodness, that the goodness is perfect. If you took away the goodness, what would be left? Nothing. There's no perfection. Perfection doesn't stand there by itself and exist by itself. The mind looks at the idea and says, I understand what perfection means irrespective of the word goodness. But it doesn't exist in reality, such a thing called perfection. It's got to be locked in with something. You see? That's why in order to experience God's perfection, you must experience the midah itself, the positive midah. And then you know it's perfect. But you can't. You can't experience Ribbono Shel Olam in a positive way. You see? That's a difference between an accidental being and a substantial being. Roundness is an accidental being because it has to exist in something. If you take something away, it ceases. And the ball itself is a substantial being. It can exist by itself. That's a short course on philosophy. But anyway, real short. Let me just give an example. Let's say an architect builds a building, right? From that building, you can see that this architect is incredible. He has a profound mind. He's a brilliant architect, right? So you know that the man who made this has a brilliant mind, right? But are you experiencing the man? No, maybe he's dead 40 years ago. You see? So you see what I'm saying? When you experience Ribbono Shel Olam, you're not experiencing the perfection from his pu'ulos, from his acts. You're experiencing the entity itself. What you can see, what you can grab, what you can contact, that's different. You see? And that's not knowable. You see? So, So the question, of course, is what can we connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam? And the answer is Achdusoy. But how? Okay. If you notice one thing, we say God is one, right? What's the opposite of one? Two. Or another way of saying it? Multiplicity. Plurality. The opposite of unity is multiplicity or plurality, right? What did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? The Ribbono Shel Olam, le'asad lovay, we will be able to experience the Ribbono Shel Olam that he is one. But you know how? You know, I can experience something as one by seeing that everything else is not. In other words, it's possible for a person to experience the unity of an individual by experiencing the fact that there is nothing else. Because the attribute of one is not really an attribute. It means that one merely means that whatever we're talking about is one quantity. See, it's the same idea as perfection and shlemus. It's really an accidental idea. You know what I mean? One what? You have to talk about one thing. If you remove thing, there's no concept of one even. What is one? One is quantity. Can you understand quantity without any objects? No, it has no meaning. There's no such thing as a quantity if there's no objects which have quantity. Right? If there's chairs in this room, there's no chairs, I can't talk about quantity either. If there's chairs, I can say there are chairs and there are three of them. So the concept three exists. But if there's no chairs, there's nothing to talk about. I cannot even talk about quantity. You see? That's why quantity itself is an accidental being. Except again, the mind fools you because we can talk about quantity without ever referring to any objects. But of course, in real reality, you have to be talking about something. Right? The same idea. When we talk about oneness is not a thing. All it says is that whatever thing we're talking about is one of a kind. So when we say that the Ribbono Shel Olam, okay, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is one, we mean there's one of a kind of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we mean, right? But one is not a midah in itself. You understand what I'm saying? Just like perfection is not a midah in itself. It's an attribute about something. Unity tells us that whatever God has is only one. But it's not a thing in itself. Okay? Now, we cannot experience the midas or the etzel of God, but you know what we can experience? We can experience that whatever God does have, there's nothing else. You know how? What happens if God creates plurality? He creates the notion called plurality, multiplicity, period. Right? And all of a sudden you experience the non-existence of that plurality. What begins to happen? You begin to experience his oneness of being. You don't experience a specific thing about him, midah, but whatever he is, you experience that whatever he has is one, and you can begin experiencing the oneness of that being without getting into any of his specific etzem. And you can experience that indirectly by seeing that nothing else has existence, you see? So, Achdusoy is part of his etzem, because God truly is one. However, we can, number one, experience oneness, because oneness itself is not a midah. It says that whatever God has is one. But the idea of oneness is not a midah in itself. It's, like I said, it's an accidental being. A quantity must exist in a thing in order to have existence. So the idea of oneness in God, of course, we can experience because it's not He Himself. And even that, we don't experience the oneness of His midas. We experience the lack of plurality of His midas. So it comes out that we can experience the unity of the Rebbeinu Shalom indirectly, yet it's still something part of the Atzmus of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Get it? Therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom is going to allow you to be masig His unity in Olam Habo, in this indirect way. So it's the closest to get to His Atzmusoi indirectly. But the other Midas don't even come to His Atzmusoi, His self, you see? That's the closest we'll get. But don't worry, that itself is infinite. The comprehension of God's unity itself is infinite in the sense that it takes an infinite amount of time to perceive even His unity. Okay? So you'll be busy for all time to come, even perceiving His oneness, which is not even a midah, and you'll be experiencing it indirectly. That itself will take you an infinite amount of time, and you'll be experiencing infinite pleasure just by experiencing that. Okay? So it comes out that what we will be masig in Olam Haba is called two words, Hasogas Yichudoi, the comprehension, the experiencing of Yichud, of the Yichud of the Rebbeinu Shalom Himself, which is the indirect experiencing of God, which is the closest we can get to His positive idea. That's what we'll be experiencing in Olam Haba. And that itself is infinite amount of time that we can experience that itself. And to the accompaniment to that is tremendous amount of pleasure. That is the pivot of the entire Bria. The Achdusoi of the Rebbeinu Shalom. Because God now is going to create a universe based on His unity. And we're going to see how He does this incredible trick. This incredible way of doing it. That everything you're going to see is going to be based on Achdusoi. And you know why? Because you know what God wants? He wants the task and the reward to be the exact same thing. God wants everything to mirror or to be His Yehudai and not different ideas. And we'll be getting that into next week when we talk about the task. Right now we understand what the Ischa is. Remember I told you? The Ischa is Hasoras Yehudai. That's the Ischa in Olam Haba. That's it. And now you understand that it's the closest to Atzmusoi without really getting to His Midah. Anything else is not. Okay? And the future Shurim will be developing the entire idea of how Achdusoi or Yehudai answers everything. Okay? So now we have a central idea called Hasogas Yehudai. And next week Shurim will be devoted to the entire unfolding of that.